Let's talk to Ty Dunn of Bleacher Report.
You're so happy that you're talking about Seinfeld that you can't say people's
names.
But
I have a gripe with Ty, who joins us.
Oh, I
Miami.
Also have a gripe with Ty.
I know yours is more significant, but let me get to mine first. What's going on, Ty?
Yeah. Let's just talk Seinfeld instead. If we got gripes all over the place, I'm down to talking about George Costanza.
This is our Festivus now. It's like we're airing the grievances with you from your work.
Actually, you know what?
Let's go.
The more I think about it, it's not a gripe. I'm actually appreciative of your piece with the Raheem Mostert. It was great that you alerted me to a place that I can avoid now my entire life, never going to New Smyrna Beach, Florida, the shark bite capital of the world. Thank you for that.
Yeah. That's a service.
You got it. Yeah. God, it was horrifying to even hear those stories, so I don't think I'll be there myself.
All right. Now, my gripe is real. I think it's very appropriate that Kobe changed the way we view Achilles injuries for NBA players and just the ability to come back from them. And the same happens for Richard Sherman, where, you know, he comes back from that injury as a 30-plus-year-old corner. I think everyone looked at him signing that contract and looking at it like, wow, you were your own agent, and are you even going to be good anymore, and the Niners are dumb, and you're dumb. Everybody here is making a mistake, and he's been lights out. You wrote a piece about him that we'll start by discussing Sherm. But when you asked him if this is the best defense he's ever played for as a Seahawks fan, if there was like a slot on a computer where you could put money into and immediately the author of that piece's face would emerge from the laptop screen and you could just full punch that face, there would have been no price I would have paid, sir. Like, how dare you, first of all? How dare you?
Hey, you know what? It has to be asked. You know what? Maybe sometimes you dangle a little bait out there. Oh. You know, you put a nice juicy worm there on the hook and you throw it in the water, and maybe Richard Sherman will say, heck yeah, the San Francisco defense is better than that trash we had. But no, he's smarter than that. He's not going to say that. So. But no, it's a really good defense.
Yeah,
hey, this 49ers
fine.
Defense is really, really good.
Is it the defense of the decade,
but it's
like
good.
The Seahawks? No,
you know,
don't you dare. Don't
probably
you dare.
Not. Yeah, you're right.
Settle down. Listen, his secondary had a name, all right? It had a name. Yeah,
yeah,
you're right. The one who's settling down is
me. Yeah, I'm with you. It's not close.
Here's my actual Sherm question. For as good as he is he the best player in this game that is the least relevant?
Ooh, I think he's more relevant than Darrell Revis and Co. might think. I get what you're getting at. Like, you're saying, all right, if he's just going to stay on one side of the field and, you know, say Kansas City just trots, you know, DeMarcus Robinson out there, or somebody that, you know, somebody that they don't really intend to throw the ball to 10, 12 times, that you can take him out of the game. I get that, but
that Tyreek Hill is kind of the one type of receiver that Sherm really struggles against.
That too. I mean, and that was another question we asked him. It's like, can you keep up with this guy? And he said,
no.
We'll see. He's still pretty good. I mean, I know Davante Adams, you know, beat him on that one, but that was about it for the entire season. He hasn't really been beat deep, but I just think his effect, it goes beyond just who he can take away on one side of the field. I mean, if you can take away that side, that affects everything. And I really think he's kind of paid it forward. He's passed it on. He said he knows what a receiver in front of him is going to do 70% of the time, at least. And you got to think a lot of the other DBs on the team are getting close to that place because he's talking to them every day. He's leading them every day. You know, I think that his effect, it kind of goes beyond what you'd see on film or what you'd think schematically.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I am a huge Sherm fan, and I actually loved the piece. People should go and read it. All of your work is, as we've always said, it's very, very excellent. But I loved his answer basically about, you know, the criticisms of him in his career is that, like this guy wants to win. That's the thing about Richard Sherman, is that he's like, I don't need to try to prove to you that I can go around the cover around the field and be tracing whoever it is. I know I'm effective here. I know I shut down one part of the football field. And in a team sport where it's like, do your job, you don't need to worry about this portion of the field. And it's huge. And I don't mean to diminish him. I just think that the way that Kansas City plays, like looking for those over the top, big play, just beat you down the field, it really does mitigate one of Sherm's biggest strengths, which is like, it doesn't, it makes sense that he would be that way against Minnesota, right? That he would come up with a big play in that ball game against a quarterback who really didn't want to go down the field and who wanted to kind of keep it between short intermediate routes. It's like, that's where Richard Sherman is, I think, arguably the greatest quarterback or cornerback of his generation, is like short and intermediate. You're not beating him. He's going to turn the ball over down the field against speedsters. If Tyreek Hill's across from him, or yeah, you're right. If you end up putting a largely irrelevant receiver, that's where I'm kind of like, I don't know. I don't know if we're going to be able to get the best version of Sherm, even if it's a good version of Sherm.
It's a great point. I mean, and also you've got just weapons all over the place. I mean, Travis Kelce, Hardman, obviously Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, I mean, Damian Williams out of the backfield. This is not exactly Marquez Valdes-Scantling and a broken down Jimmy Graham and Alan Lazard. You know, I mean, this is a different challenge. And, oh, yeah, Patrick Mahomes is, you know, light years beyond Aaron Rodgers at this stage of Rodgers' career, too. So it's a different beast. I mean, you're absolutely right. I guess we're going to find out. I think that, you know, what the 49ers have going for them, though, is they can get pressure without blitzing, and we've seen it again and again in this game. I mean, the Giants against Tom Brady at Brady's peak twice, it's they didn't have to blitz. You know, they flustered him just enough, got him off the spot just enough, and that's just a DB's best friend, and San Francisco does that better than anybody. I mean, all those first round picks, all the money that they poured into the defensive line, it was for this game to try to slow down a Patrick Mahomes. So we're going to see. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch. It's not going to be that snoozer we had last year.
No, it just this one feels almost, and I'm jinxing it at this point, but it almost feels safe, fail safe from an entertainment standpoint. We're talking to Tyler Dunn, NFL features writer at Bleacher Report. And yeah, I think that's it, is that if that D-line can get to Mahomes and force him to make a mistake, that you love having a guy like Richard Sherman, because if he does make one, he'll be able to capitalize on a small window. That's why you have game breakers like this. You also wrote, as Ben outlined, about Raheem Mostert. And all I can think about him is how he had this unbelievable statistical performance against the Green Bay Packers. And it was more of a side note where you're just like, yeah, or a footnote. You're like, okay, yeah, that's
200 yards, 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, he's all right. Like, mostly we looked at the stat of all the yards before contact. What would he have to do in order for us to actually give him credit in this football game?
Man, because you're right. I mean, a lot of it's Shanahan. A lot of it's the offensive line that's stuck together now for a few years. I mean, there's these other factors. It does seem like whoever they can throw back there is going to produce. But, I mean, there's a reason that this guy's in the history books right now. I mean, he was really built for this moment, for this playoff run. I mean, beyond the getting fired from his job 6 times, which is just insane. I mean, imagine any of us in our profession just, you know, getting fired, told that we're not good enough in a span of, you know, 2 years, 6 times. That's just crazy. But, you know, beyond that, like we wrote, I mean, he's been through it all, from blasting himself in the toe to, you know, obviously what his dad did to his brother, shooting him 4 times, to trying to distance himself from the state of Florida. Now he's back in Florida trying to win a Super Bowl. He couldn't script this. I really didn't know what to expect getting together with him. Like, part of me thought, oh, we'll talk about, you know, why didn't Purdue, like, use you right back in college? You were a receiver. And he just kind of took it to this really deep, deep place and just grasped everything right now and kind of wants to be inspiration for people. He's not afraid to tell his story and to really go to those places he's never gone publicly before. I think there's more to this guy. He's not just some, you know, fill-in running back that they picked off the street that is lucky to be here. I mean, he's earned everything he's got. He's been at San Fran since 2016. I think that there's been a lot of build-up to this moment, and he is really that perfect back for the perfect scheme at this time.
Yeah, I feel a little, listen, as much as you can feel sorry for a guy who's in a Super Bowl and about to be the leading rusher on that team, it feels like there were these two divergent narratives that were going to happen based on the outcomes. Like, if it's a Titans and Packers Super Bowl, we're talking about how Aaron Jones supplemented Aaron Rodgers and the importance of a running back. And we're talking about Derrick Henry and the value of still having a stud that you can hand the ball to and the closer and blah, blah, blah. And instead you end up with two undrafted guys, two offensive coaches that are just largely responsible for so much of what their teams do outside of, you know, obviously Pat Mahomes' brilliance. and that neither of these running backs feels like in a winnable situation where it's like
Tevin Coleman might be back too.
But yeah, it just feels like the narrative is just simply going to be running backs don't matter. And if you have good coaching, you can find anybody and make it work.
Yeah. I mean, which may be true.
Yeah.
but he's
mounting evidence.
And then, you know, I mean, what he's designing is stuff we just haven't seen before. The misdirection, the motion, one play can look exactly the same in a San Francisco offense, and you can do 20, 30 things out of it, it seems. And so maybe, whoever you put in there is going to take advantage of it. But I really do think that, it's all zone blocking scheme. It's just all about, anticipation and kind of sensing where and when that lane's going to develop. And just Raheem Mostert, he's been there a while now. Like you said, he's worked with these linemen for a good 3 years, and it took him a while. He didn't do anything like this in college. He didn't do anything like this early in his career. It took a lot of studying and a lot of practice, and let alone what he's been through in life to get to this point, which is kind of like what that scheme is in terms of just seizing the opportunity and cutting it at the right time and being decisive. I think that, I'm not so sure in a Super Bowl where it can come down to an inch, it can come down to one play. He could be the difference. I think the difference between him and like a Matt Breida or him and a Tevin Coleman, I mean, that could be the difference in a win or a loss.
Talking to Ty Dunn. So, he's Raheem Mostert's a great story. Andy Reid's a great story. He's a sympathetic figure, no question, for a neutral headed into this game.
Have a lot of sympathy for these guys.
I do, at least. I don't know. I'm sympathetic towards him because he's had all the regular season success, sixth most all time when it comes to wins. Only one head coach in the Super Bowl era has gone into the Hall of Fame without a Super Bowl victory, and that was Marv Levy. And, appearing in forced right, pretty impressive. Does Andy Reid need this Super Bowl victory or a Super Bowl victory to get into the Hall of Fame in your eyes?
He shouldn't, because of the number of wins and the longevity and everything he's done, and especially this next stage of his career and what he's done with Patrick Mahomes is just remarkable. But yeah, he probably does. I mean, Marv Levy, like you said, he got in because they made the Super Bowl four times. I mean, that's, we've never seen that. So, four NFC championship appearances in a row like that, that's not going to get you. And he's got to win the Super Bowl. That's, I liked what Deion Sanders said the other day, and that, let's not just be admitting everybody to the Hall of Fame. I mean, it really should be the best of the best, the cream of the crop. Maybe you don't, admit, what is it, six every year. Maybe sometimes it's just a couple. It's only those that deserve it. And I kind of like that. And, it's good to have a high standard. It's not a participation trophy league. So, yeah, he's got to win it to get in. Absolutely.
I don't agree. I just think, Andy Reid has had basically, I don't know, have the numbers in front of me, but how many years would his offense have not been top five? If you're talking about influential game callers and guys you would have want to had for so long, it's just eventually you put up enough of a track record where it becomes regular season still does count. Even with the ring culture that we have, he's had so many successful teams. And to me, it kind of feels like the Michael Jordan thing where it's we're still putting Reggie Miller in the Hall of Fame because you were across from Michael. And it's you lost the Super Bowl to Belichick. You lost the playoffs last year because of losing to Belichick and Brady. It's you were in the Belichick-Brady era. You didn't get a Super Bowl. Okay, we can be a little bit more, friendly about this or understanding about these things. I don't know, maybe. That's just where I'm at with it. It's just hard for me to imagine Andy Reid not being in the Hall of Fame after, what I've seen from him for so long.
Marty Schottenheimer isn't in the Hall of Fame, right? Yep. I mean, he's kind of Marty Schottenheimer right now.
I'd rather have Andy Reid than Schottenheimer. Is that bad?
I would too. Would too. But they're about the same, level of success, around 200 wins right now. Yeah. They always get into the playoffs, not finishing the job. When somebody says Andy Reid, what do you think of? Both you guys. When you hear
Joker.
That name.
No. Yeah. I don't think about that. I think about dynamic offenses. And I think of getting the most of what he has on the offensive side of the ball. And it's I'm sorry, but we're playoff choker, but D Ford lines up properly and they're going to the Super Bowl last year. And we might be talking about them being back-to-back champs. He has Donovan McNabb not throwing up all over himself in a Super Bowl. Maybe he has one of those rings too. I don't know. He's a clock management thing.
You brought up that Super Bowl. Let's go back to that fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes.
What was it? An 18-minute drive to cut it from 24 to 14 to 20. The clock management's what comes to mind for me. Again and again and again in these big moments, like his teams
but
just
that was what 2005
manage those situations.
That was 2005 Super Bowl, right? I think it was.
Well, and then the 04 season, 05 Super Bowl.
Right. I'm just saying,
and
like,
he had a playoff game just a few years ago against New England. It was kind of the same thing. Granted, it was Alex Smith, but he can rewrite it with Patrick Mahomes. He can definitely change that narrative. But it seems like that's what comes to mind right now.
I'm just saying 15 years later, Andy Reid is still arguably the number two or number three play caller that you would want offensively in the NFL.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
No doubt about it.
Like, that's hard. Like, how many coaches last 15 years like that? Like, again, it's this Brady and Belichick thing that has happened with our brains where we look at guys through that prism now. Like, well, you should be able to play until you're 40 years old. Oh, well, Philip Rivers, can't he jump on his team somewhere? He's only 37, 38. Why can't he beat Tom Brady? It's like, because that's what the greatness is. Well, Bill Belichick's been around for so long. That's what greatness is. Like, Andy Reid, 15 years of being just like, yes, unequivocally, no doubt about it, slam dunk, home, you're getting a great offense for 15 years. Like, it just that, I don't know. That makes me like, you're one of the all-time greats, regardless of just the wins. I got one more for you because, I mean, what would a hit with you be without me bringing something up with the Buffalo Bills?
I love it.
So Mahomes is acquired because of a trade with the Bills, as I'm sure a lot of people know. And this is what the Bills got in that trade. They get Tre'Davious White. That's what they use with the 27th overall pick, which they traded down for. Like, arguably the number one corner that you would want to have for the next, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. They get Deion Dawkins, their left tackle, who is really, really good. They use the picks that they got to trade up and get Trumaine Edmonds. Again, one of the more promising linebackers in the NFL right now. And also Zay Jones, which is a failure. But isn't the lesson here that there's nothing you can pay that's too much for a franchise quarterback? Because there's no doubt about it that the Bills would, if they were given an alternate universe where it's like, give up all those pieces for Pat Mahomes, they'd be like, done.
Yeah. No, I was hoping to go that direction. I totally agree. It's like, I mean, it doesn't really matter what else you do with your roster if you can't nail quarterback. We just still don't know if Josh Allen's any good. Last in completion percentage, what, 24th or 25th in passer rating? He ran the ball, ran around. It was exciting, but he had a soft schedule. You know, when they needed him in the playoffs, I mean, I don't know what he morphed into in that fourth quarter, but all they had to do was really hand the ball off, and they probably would win.
Yep.
And he had a shot at Patrick Mahomes. He had a shot at Deshaun Watson. Like, nothing else meant. You're right. Tre'Davious White could be the best cornerback in the NFL. Edmonds at linebacker could be up-and-coming linebacker in the NFL. God, he just made the Pro Bowl. But it doesn't matter if Josh Allen doesn't improve. I mean, Sean McDermott would absolutely disagree with that because he wants to win. I'm sure he just basically says, you know, give me whoever at quarterback. My God, he kept going back to the Nathan Peterman well. And he thinks he can win with Nathan Peterman. He thinks he can win with whoever quarterback with his defense, with what he's built. I think that's a flawed way to go about it, in that if Allen isn't good, and he might not be good, the Bills are going to be right back to where they started. Because, I mean, think back to the E.J. Manuel days and on how much Doug Whaley tried to build around E.J. and trading up for Sammy Watkins, and they had all these weapons, and it just didn't matter in the end.
Yeah. I mean, well said. It's so damn true. Ty, appreciate the time. Great stuff so far. We're going to continue to read what you keep pumping out there. Thanks for this.
Hey, you got it, guys, and we'll definitely ask Sherman again, see if he can follow up on that 49er Seahawks defense debate. You know, get to the bottom of that. Sure.
How dare you go there.
Thanks, Ty.
See you, buddy.